Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the State Bank Financial Corporation results for the third quarter 2015. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1, followed by the 4 on your telephone keypad. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Thursday, October 22nd, 2015. And it's my pleasure now to turn the call over to Joe Evans, Chairperson and CEO of State Bank Financial Corporation. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Jose. Good morning, and thank you for joining our call. Here with me on the call are our President, Tom Wiley, Chief Financial Officer, Sheila Ray, and Chief Credit Officer, David Black. After our prepared remarks, as usual, we will open the line for questions. Our third quarter earnings press release and the slide presentation we'll reference on this call are all available in the investor section of our website, statebt.com. As usual, I need to remind you that anything we say on this call is subject to our cautionary note regarding forward-looking statements in the press release and on slide 2 of the earnings presentation. Now turn with me to slide 2. I'd like to talk about some strong fundamental results and the successful execution of the strategic priorities that we set out for you earlier. First thing I want to mention is fee income, which continues to progress nicely. Fee income of nearly $9 million in the quarter was up 145% from just $3.6 million a year ago, as mortgage banking, SBA lending, and payroll fee income continued to provide meaningful contributions. All three of these initiatives result from strategically targeted acquisitions which have integrated seamlessly and delivered exactly what they were intended to deliver. Second is core deposits. Our funding mix continues to improve from our emphasis on non-interest-bearing demand deposits and transaction accounts. Average non-interest-bearing deposits have increased for 14 straight quarters and now make up nearly 30% of total deposits. We believe we have a significant competitive advantage in this area as our transaction account balances are driven by the successful integration of payroll, treasury services, and cash management capabilities into a nicely packaged competitive offering. Third is efficiency. As we disclosed with the organizational realignment in September, we expect to realize approximately $9 million in annual cost savings after full implementation in the second quarter of 2016. We are absolutely on track to deliver that. Early termination of loss share contributed significantly to these expense savings, both in personnel and systems, and the benefits are already beginning to show up in our numbers. After earning back the charge we took for early termination, we are fully on track with the projected expense reductions and measurably ahead of our initial expectations for recoveries of prior charge-offs. Just as a reminder, if the loss share agreements were still in effect, the FDIC would be entitled to 80 or 95% of those recoveries. Now, 100% of those recoveries are to the benefit of State Bank. And also, as a reminder, we have charged off about $1 billion of loans over the period of time that we've worked these failed banks and feel like we have a lot of opportunity to mine here. At the time of announcement, I said early termination was a good deal for us. Now, a full quarter into it, I'd like to modify that statement somewhat. Early termination was a great deal. With roughly $97 million of accretable discount remaining on our books, our net interest margin is going to continue to benefit from these failed bank transactions for some time to come. Finally, let's talk about loan growth. Once again, we had strong originations this quarter, leading to growth across all loan types. In addition, we expect Patriot Capital, the acquisition that we announced this morning, to add both additional growth and diversification in a meaningful way going forward. Tom Wiley will go into more detail on Patriot in his part of the program a little bit later. Overall, we experienced very strong core fundamentals that produced solid operating results in the third quarter, and I am very pleased both with the results and the outlook that I see going forward. With that, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Tom.
Thank you, Joe. I'll start on slide four with high-level results from the third quarter. Operating income for the quarter was $11.4 million, or 31 cents per diluted share. Once again, we experienced strong organic loan growth, leading to record interest income on loans and investments as our recent acquisitions continue to show positive contributions. As Joe mentioned, we experienced continued progress from key non-interest income sources as mortgage banking, SBA, and payroll collectively had strong quarters. Now, turning to slide five, we provide a roll forward of our total loan portfolio, which shows organic and purchased non-credit impaired loan growth of $116 million, or 6% in the quarter, including the offset of $18 million in paydowns of the purchased credit impaired portfolio. Total gross loans increased $98 million, or 19% annualized in the third quarter, with loan growth increasing across virtually every loan category. On this slide, you will also notice, once again, we had originations of roughly $450 million in the third quarter. However, paydowns remained high, and as we've said previously, the level of paydowns as the portfolio matures is what primarily drives the net growth number. We are encouraged that our pipelines remain solid headed into the final 2 months of the year. Next, I want to discuss the acquisition of Patriot Capital, which we announced this morning. We have long talked about adding asset-generating business lines to State Bank, and we believe Patriot is a terrific fit for us. Patriot is a leading provider of equipment financing to the retail petroleum industry and is based here in Atlanta. Patriot originates loans with an average denomination range of $100,000 to $150,000 with very attractive yields and has historical annual production of over $30 million and closer to a $40 million run rate this year, which we intend to keep on our balance sheet. Patriot finances equipment for retail distributors like your local gas station throughout the United States. The majority of Patriot loans are fully amortizing with a five-year maturity and yields in excess of 6%. Chris Santney is the founder and president of Patriot and will join State Bank as president of the newly created Patriot Finance Division. We also expect to retain all 17 of Patriot's employees. We are excited about the additional growth and diversification of our loan portfolio that Patriot will provide, as this is another vertical through which we can efficiently and prudently add attractive assets in our current low-rate environment. Next, moving to slide six, deposit funding, we continue to experience solid growth in transaction deposit accounts as average non-interest-bearing demand deposits increased for the 14th consecutive quarter. Non-interest-bearing deposits now make up a record high at nearly 30% of total deposits at the end of the third quarter. And our cost of funds continues to stay low at just 28 basis points, a 7 basis point improvement from the previous year. With that, I will now turn the presentation over to Sheila to discuss our strong financial results in the quarter.
Thank you, Tom. Turning to slide 7 of the presentation, I want to turn your focus to the company's strong revenue trends. Total interest income on loans and invested funds excluding accretion, was $28.3 million, up 4% from $27.1 million in the previous quarter, and up $9.6 million, or 51%, from the third quarter of 2014, as we continue to replace the runoff in accretion income with traditional interest income. The increase in interest income reflects the effect of our two recent bank deals, combined with our strong organic loan growth that Tom spoke about. Total net interest income, including accretion, was just $513,000 lower than a year ago, despite a $10 million decline in accretion income. Accretion income increased $2.8 million from the previous quarter to $11.2 million this quarter, due primarily to larger gains from early payoffs and recovery income. The $11.2 million in accretion income consisted of base accretion of $7.2 million and loan recovery income of $4 million. I want to briefly walk through the loan recovery income that Joe mentioned as it relates to the early termination of loss share. Of the $4 million in loan recovery income, roughly $2 million was income that previously would have been paid to the FDIC under loss share agreements. Additionally, we had loan collection and OREO cost of negative $1.2 million as gains from sales on OREO properties more than offset our foreclosure expenses in the quarter, which led to a positive impact on expenses. Of the $1.2 million in gains, approximately $519,000 would have been paid to the FDIC under loss share agreements. Overall, we were able to recognize $2.5 million this quarter that would have previously gone to the FDIC. When we include recovery income from the second quarter post-loss share termination, we have already recovered more than the $3.1 million cash payment for termination paid to the FDIC. So we feel pretty good about getting our return back within our initial projected time frame when you consider the full charge recognized in the second quarter that Joe referenced. Now we'll turn to non-interest income, which was $8.9 million in the third quarter, an increase of over $5 million or 145% from the third quarter of 2014, but down slightly compared to the second quarter of 2015, primarily related to the accounting treatment for interest rate hedges, which contributed to a $636,000 decline from the second quarter. Mortgage income declined $400,000. However, the increase in SBA and payroll fee income largely offset that decline. Although our SBA team had a strong quarter, we would expect the fourth quarter to be somewhat lower. I do not believe that this quarter is indicative of a new quarterly run rate for SBA, but we are very proud of what they accomplished this quarter. Next, I want to briefly touch on expenses and efficiency, so turn with me to slide 8. Total non-interest expense for the second quarter was $32.4 million, with the increase from the prior quarter due almost entirely to higher salaries and benefit costs as a result of the $3 million in severance from the organizational realignment announced in September. However, operating expenses were down in the quarter even after adjusting out the $1.2 million positive impact from loan collection and OREO costs. And if you look at every expense line item, expenses in the quarter were down almost across the board. We announced in September that we expect approximately $9 million in annualized cost savings by the second quarter of 2016, $4.6 million of which was disclosed on the earnings call in July. Approximately 70% of the efficiency initiatives have been completed, and the remainder will be completed by the first quarter of 2016. This concludes my remarks, and I'm now going to turn the discussion over to David.
Thanks, Sheila, and good morning, everyone. I will pick up on slide 9 of the presentation and reference the asset quality metrics on Table 6 of the press release. My prepared remarks will be brief, as it was a relatively uneventful quarter from a credit perspective, which as a credit guy, I'm quite fond of uneventful. As previously mentioned, we experienced organic loan growth across all primary call codes this quarter. This growth was diverse by asset class, line of business, and geography, and generally, the organic portfolio continues to perform very well. Non-performing organic loans were $5.6 million, representing only 30 basis points of total organic loans, and organic past dues remained extraordinarily low at just 8 basis points of total organic loans. Organic annualized net charge-offs for the quarter rounded up to 1 basis point of average loans. We recorded an organic provision of $614,000, and coupled with the loan growth in the quarter, the organic allowance as a percent of organic loans moved down 10 basis points to 1.19%. This allowance still exceeds organic NPAs by over 3.5 times. Organic non-performing assets were up slightly due to a $500,000 inflow to OREO, which was exclusively related to the three owned branches closed in the second quarter. The purchased non-credit impaired assets, which came from Bank of Atlanta and First Bank acquisitions, have maintained solid credit metrics with past dues of 64 basis points and a net recovery in the third quarter. Transitioning to the purchased credit impaired portfolio, we had $159 million of PCI loans remaining at the end of the third quarter, down from $177 million in the prior quarter. PCI past due loans remained relatively consistent with 14% at 30 days past due. However, keep in mind that the $159 million recorded investment of PCI loans is at a 32% discount to the unpaid principal balance and at a 46% discount to the contractual legal balance. Additionally, we recorded a negative provision on PCI loans in the quarter, reflecting overall improving cash flows on PCI loans. Wrapping up, we continue to see positive fundamental economic trends in Atlanta, Augusta, Macon, and Warner Robins, which are reflected in this quarter's strong organic loan growth, as well as stable credit metrics. I'll now turn the discussion back over to Joe to start the Q&A.
Okay. Thank you, David, Sheila, and Tom. Jose, you can open the line now for questions.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone keypad. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. If you're using a speakerphone, please leave your handset before entering your request. Once again, 1-4 on your telephone keypad. One moment, please, for the first question. And our first question is coming from the line of Kevin Fitzsimmons from Hoyt Group. Please proceed with your question.
Hey, good morning, everyone.
Hey, Kevin.
Just on the subject of accretion, and thank you for the breakdown between the base and the gains. That's very helpful. But how should we think about it, like with the $7.2 million base accretion and $4 million in the gains? You know, if you were in our seat trying to model this out, I mean, would we basically be assuming that 7.2, which seems a little on the low side? I thought what you guys had said, it's probably more in the 8 to 10 range, I thought, last quarter. Would you kind of start with that and then assume no gains, or would you just to be realistic, assume some modest portion of accelerated gains each quarter? Thanks.
You know, I would probably, Kevin, this is Sheila, I would probably look at this and say, okay, we did some calculations, and the life of the remaining just base accretion on a weighted average basis varies somewhat depending on assumptions you make, but it's somewhere around 7 quarters or so, a little bit less than I think what we said in the past. I think I would assume some level of accelerated recoveries, just, you know, higher levels of recoveries. I think that the base accretion will continue to decline somewhat, but you will see that decline slow a little bit, is our expectation. So probably I would look at the decline in base accretion from quarter over quarter and assume that that will probably not be quite as fast. Cut that back a little bit, and then I would look at the recoveries, and I wouldn't assume $4 million every quarter. I'm looking at David here, but we can't really predict that because that's going to be bumpy, but we are opportunistic, and we are going to recover as much as we can.
Got it. That's helpful. Thank you. Can I also ask, on the provision line, that's such a wild card for us to when we see negative provisions, we always think unsustainable and that can't repeat, but can it? I mean, maybe it can, and if you could just talk about how, I know there's two moving parts in that provision line, but if you could talk about how you look at that going out over the next several quarters. Thanks.
Hey, Kevin, this is David. As you recognize, the negative provision in totality was driven by the purchase credit impaired provision, which that's going to wane down as these specifically allocated reserve gets recognized as these PCI loans are resolved. The provision component of that is going to be driven by our quarterly re-estimation of cash flows. I know that's a challenging thing to estimate, and we struggle with that internally. Is it something that I think is sustainable or something that I would model a negative provision on PCI? No, I would not. That's not to say that we couldn't have a negative provision next quarter.
Okay, so it's something you wouldn't expect, but it is possible.
Correct.
Okay. All right, thanks, guys.
And our next question is coming from the line of Christopher Marinac from Fix Partners. Please proceed with your question.
Thanks. Good morning. I want to drill down on the margin, excluding the accretion income, and the sort of rise we've been seeing here for consecutive quarters. How much of that is being driven by new production, or is it also driven by other factors, Joe or Sheila?
So, Chris, I was hoping that this would be helpful. I've been asked to provide this in the past, so I hope you guys find it helpful. We were impressed by the trend ourselves and a few things we looked at that we think contribute to it. One is the shifting out of cash into investments and loans. First, we shifted into investments. Now, more recently, you've been seeing that shifting into loans, so we're holding much less cash, so we've deployed our assets more wisely. The loan-to-deposit ratio has improved, and I think, you know, obviously the loan portfolio and the dynamics of the growth in the sectors there also contributes to it. Can you think of anything I've left out, David?
The only thing I would add, there's some benefit as the purchase non-credit impaired portfolio rolls into the organic book, and that's historically been at higher yields than our standalone organic portfolio.
I think that's right. True. Now, the other thing I would say is I would not confuse this margin with a core net interest margin. And the reason I say that is because we made an adjustment here that anyone else could, frankly, recalculate. Obviously, we would not have left this cash sitting in a non-earning situation. So our margin, if you were tried to compute something that would be equivalent to a core, would be a little bit higher than this. This is simply what the margin is if you back the accretion out, which people have asked us to show.
Yeah. But if these loans, that the covered loans, were not accreting, they do have an underlying contractual yield that's included in the accretion number.
And we calculated this any number of ways, and depending on what you assume about those loans and those funds, this net interest margin without the effect of accretion would be anywhere from 2 to 10 basis points higher.
Great. And back to David's point, I mean, if we go back to the 4.91 yield that's on the loans, excluding the PCI, that still is a trend that you are seeing positive and you know, may well continue to be something to watch.
Yeah, but Chris, I don't know that there's significant upside to the 4.91 from a yield perspective. It's 7 basis points quarter over quarter movement is nice, and I think that is partially impacted by the influence of purchase credit impaired or purchase non-credit impaired moving into organic. And I think we all know that the earning asset generation environment is a competitive one, and so the whatever influence that may have is offset by just a generally tough environment from a pricing perspective on new originations.
And if I could insert here, too, I think that's one of the reasons we're so excited about the Patriot acquisition, because right, they will provide some diversity and a higher yielding, a more attractive yield than some of our other mixes.
Great. And then just a separate follow-up, you know, we see the progress on the deposits this quarter and in previous quarters, but what's your pipeline sort of whether you call it commercial account wins or just what you see in the horizon for new deposits? Just curious to get more color there.
I'd say it just continues to look steady. But everybody, we us all need to bear in mind that there's a seasonality to it. And because these commercial relationships are relatively large average balance accounts, they are subject to, on an individual basis, meaningful balance fluctuations that if the stars were to align perfectly and everybody wrote a check on the same day, you could see, you know, some downward fluctuation. But generally, we see the trend in a pretty steady upward trending direction. Again, bearing in mind seasonality and just the normal that they call them transaction accounts for a reason. There is day-to-day fluctuation.
Great. Thanks again for the background here.
And our next question is coming from Tyler Stafford from Stephens. Please proceed with your question.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey, Tyler.
Hey, congrats on the quarter and getting the Patriot deal announced. Any details you can share of how much of your excess capital this acquisition leveraged, or any metrics of the deal, you know, any profitability or efficiency metrics that Patriot had prior to acquisition?
I'll let Sheila give you some detail, but we didn't spend a lot of money here. So.
The initial consideration, Kevin, is $3.5 million, and then there will be future consideration contingent upon performance. As Tom said, the company's performance has been ticking up, and we expect it to go up even more, so we think they'll be a significant contributor.
Yeah, Tyler, just to comment on this, this is a lot of business. First of all, we've known Chris and Patriot for a long time, like what he does. We particularly like the space that he plays in, and we think this is something that we can scale for a couple of reasons. One is that with Chris having and Patriot having been a non-bank lender, a lot of Chris's time has historically been spent on arranging funding for his production.
Mm-hmm.
And we expect going forward that 100% of Chris's time is going to be focused on driving production. The second thing is that there is some technology change in the works for retail gasoline pumps regarding credit card chips that we think is going to be very positive for the replacement of retail gasoline equipment. And so from both of those directions, we think this is a line of business that's going to scale nicely for us.
And just to clarify, we did not buy an existing portfolio, so you'll see this build over time. You'll see the effects come through in our interest income and through, I think, a nice, attractive yield that we'll be receiving, and also there will be some fee income pickup from this as well.
Yeah. Chris had historically run this as a pool and sell model, and we're converting it to a portfolio hold model.
Got it. Very helpful. So with all that said about the upfront payment, obviously still a lot of excess capital here. How are you thinking about deployment of that excess capital, either, you know, as a special on the table at this point, traditional bank M&A? I know there's been a couple of deals announced in Atlanta this week. Just how you're thinking about that?
The answer to that is yes. That all of that's on the table. There's interesting things. There are interesting things out there to look at, and I think the quality of the discussions, you know, the volume of things to seriously look at isn't a terribly long list, but the quality of the things under consideration are serious and interesting. So. Yet we continue to look at interesting deals. But we also recognize that even after looking at all these interesting deals, that we've got more capital than we need, and we annually, and we're just really getting into that time of the year, really scratch our heads as to ways that we could potentially deal with that excess level of capital in such a way that at the end of the day, it makes us all wealthier. That's about as much as I can say it at this point, but we are very open to looking at ways to in addition to acquisitions, to potentially distribute some of that capital in a way, if we can be convinced that after whatever distribution we made, that the sum total of the distribution plus the resulting share price has made our shareholders wealthier. So we work on that.
Yep. No, I appreciate that color. thank you for that. And maybe just a couple minor ones for Sheila. What was the base accretion in 2Q? I apologize if I missed that.
The base accretion. Jeremy, can you pull that? Hang on just a second. Kevin,
and
you want to take a
look? Okay. Any color on how much lower these cash balances could come down from here? Are we more or less at a floor, or could we see a little bit further compression within those balances?
You know, I don't think you're at a floor. Given where rates are right now, we're better off the less cash we're holding because the Fed doesn't want to give us much for it. So we have plenty of contingent funding, and we have a ton of liquidity, and we will maintain that liquidity, obviously. But the cash we will deploy as effectively as we can. And now there's not a lot left to run down. The base accretion in Q2 was $7.9 million.
Okay. Perfect. Thanks, guys. Congrats on a good quarter.
Thank you.
And ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone keypad. And our next question is coming from Stephen Scotton from Sandler O'Neill. Please proceed with your question.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Thanks for taking my question.
Good morning.
I was curious about a couple things. Sheila, maybe could you give me a little more color on kind of the expense run rate? And I know you said 70% of the cost saves initiative plans had been realized to date, but I guess what effect did that have in the current quarter, and what are we going to see kind of in the next two quarters as that hits the base level of expenses?
I think you'll see a noticeable dip in Q4 because when I said 70%, the way we calculated that is to go back through the reduction in force and look at final dates. Some of the dates were earlier in the year, frankly. A lot of them were in September. So we had some decline this quarter that was clouded, frankly, by some commission income and that we adjust for internally. But we'll share that number with you next quarter. But I think you're going to see, when you look at the $9 million and you say, okay, well, she's looking at $2.25 million or so a quarter, I think you can expect to see probably a reduction because some of it's already in the run rate by about, I don't know, half of that amount in addition to what we've already seen. And I think if you look at the offsets to that, so there is going to be some noise. So we're going to help you be able to see this, truthfully, because you've got the Patriot staff coming on. You've got, obviously, if the mortgage or SBA have a good quarter, you've got some direct commission income that's offset by higher, direct commission expense that's offset by higher income. So we'll help show you that expense next, or the expense savings when we do our Q4.
Okay, but as I look at moving forward into modeling that and what I think may have been included in the 3Q, it sounds like relatively minimal actually hit the run rate in 3Q.
I think we calculated that it was somewhere a little south of 300, just actual to actual, but we didn't calculate the offset of some higher accruals for people that were producers that were producing well, frankly, because we had a good quarter from a production standpoint.
Sure. Okay.
But if you subtracted the noise but didn't adjust out the incentives, we were down a little bit less than $300,000 this quarter.
Perfect.
And it would have been more than that if we adjusted out the production increases in commission expense.
Okay. And how are you thinking about that mortgage contribution moving forward? I mean, I know, like with SBA, you said this was such a strong quarter, it'd be hard to replicate. But mortgage, I was maybe a little surprised at the degree of decline over a quarter. How are you feeling about that, given the continued investments there?
You know, I think we feel good about it. If you look, we had mortgage production in the first quarter was like around 118,
right.
120. It popped up to a really high level in the second quarter. I think it was over 160. And then this quarter, the market was down, and we were down about, and it was, you know, we were down about 145, I guess, in production. So when you look at that and you go, well, gee, why were you down? Well, I think in general conditions were down. We think, though, that as the market may be down in the future, that will offset that because we're going to be growing in Atlanta. Now, we're in the infancy of turning Atlanta around and growing the mortgage production in Atlanta. So we think we can offset that. I can't promise you that production is going to always have a positive trend every quarter because there's so many things that influence mortgage production. But we feel that on a trend basis, you're going to see it continue to increase. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, I agree. I think certainly there is some seasonality, and I think if you look at some of our peers and really banks that are actually larger, they had fairly significant declines. And I do think we're better positioned because, as Sheila said, we're just beginning to scale Atlanta. And the expense structure is already baked in, so it should begin to catch some wind fourth quarter and clearly looks great for 16.
Okay. That's helpful. That's helpful. Thanks. And then maybe one last one for me. In regards to the originated loan growth in the quarter, which was really impressive, anything unusual there that drove the growth, especially maybe within the CRE bucket? It looked like that was maybe some particularly sizable growth there. So any color you can lend about what's driving the growth, if that's, you know, what you're thinking is likely moving forward from here in terms of the pace of growth?
Yeah, actually, it was coming from all segments. And while CRE does grow, or while CRE does improve volumes, it also pays off. And the commercial book has performed very well in the quarter. We've got some specialty finance groups that have performed very well. We find that verticals that we have come to the conclusion that we can operate more efficiently, and Patriot's a good example of that. We have other verticals in our capital markets group that we just really confident that it's not going to be a CRE-dominated growth as we go forward.
Okay, but in terms of pace, think you can continue to grow this thing mid-double digits? Does that seem realistic?
I think so.
Yeah, we think so. Yeah. And that's one of the great things about being a 1% share player in a $130 billion marketplace.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of business out there to look at.
With competition being eliminated weekly, it appears.
Yeah, yeah. Well, guys, thanks for taking my questions, and thanks for helping my screen be a lot greener today than it was yesterday. I appreciate that.
And our next question is coming from the line of Jennifer Demba from SunTrust. Please proceed with your question.
Hello, this is Michael on for Jenny. Just wanted to ask, you know, the Patriot acquisition and the insurance deal earlier, and also given the, you know, increase in pricing for whole bank M&A, should we expect that going forward you would deploy the capital through smaller sort of niche tuck-in deals?
Well, that just happens to be what we found. The nice thing about the Patriots, the payroll companies and the insurance agencies is you don't have a lot of the integration complexities that you do when you buy another bank, particularly another bank in market. Making an in-market acquisition of a smaller bank work has so much to do with culture and personality that you look at a lot of those things to find one that works. The smaller fee income generating or specifically asset generating verticals, we largely are leaving them alone and helping them scale. And we're paying less for them. but really believe that the synergies between, in the case of Patriot, our funding capability and our capital base, is really going to help them grow at a measurably faster pace than they could have grown standalone. And I think that dynamic will be present for other similarly situated asset-generating verticals that we add. We've got a number of interesting traditional bank opportunities on the table. When they hit, they'll likely be larger and more significant. But they also take longer to make happen. So while we work on those things, we hope to continue to be hitting some solid singles with more fee-generating verticals and specific asset-generating niches that are just good fits with the credit culture and also have the synergies with the other lines of business that we're in.
Okay, and given your sort of general philosophy on M&A pricing and the higher prices that we've seen in Atlanta more recently, does that sort of portend that future bank M&A needs to be in other markets, or can you just give us a little color there?
Well, yeah, not necessarily, because one of the great advantages of an in-market deal is the expectation of much higher cost savings than you get in entering a new market. The nominal price that you pay for an acquisition is really only relevant on a fully modeled basis. And for example, it's not uncommon, this was the case in Bank of Atlanta, to get somewhere on the order of 50% cost eliminations. That we merged one of our branches into them. We're very fortunate to get very high utilization of some of their key people in roles that we needed to fill. But we affected every penny of a 50% cost elimination out of Bank of Atlanta. When you can get that kind of cost elimination on something that also is synergistic from a revenue standpoint, you can justify paying more. It would be very difficult to get anywhere approaching a 50% cost elimination out of a bank in a new market. I don't think that for the right deal, I think you can make an Atlanta deal make sense even at the prices that we're seeing, if the synergies, particularly the revenue synergies, the fit, and the cost eliminations are where we expect them to be.
Okay, thanks very much.
And our next question is coming from the line of Kevin Fitzsimmons from Hoyt Group. Please proceed with your question.
Hey, guys, I had a follow-up, but it got asked and answered. Thank you.
Okay.
And our follow-up question is coming from the line of Nancy Bush from NAB Research. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning. How are you?
Hey, Nancy.
I have a question about the level of paydowns. You referenced, a large level of paydowns in the quarter and your CRE portfolio and the short duration, answers part of the question. But we've seen for several companies now a, quote, unexpectedly large level of paydowns this quarter. And I'm wondering if there is some, underlying trend here. Are companies simply so flush with cash at this point that, they're just looking around and saying, we'll pay down debt? I mean, do you see anything going on sort of under the surface here?
Not in our portfolio, and I think that's largely driven by the nature of the commercial real estate that makes up our portfolio. When our CRE loans pay out, it's because they've reached the end of a project. They have achieved stabilization of rent rolls. And it was their plan all along to take that out either to a sale or to long-term capital market funding. But I don't see anything from the standpoint of attitudes of borrowers driving an acceleration of payoffs. But it's just the normal activity. And historically, we've had a high level of payoffs in the fourth quarter as people bump up against a 12/31 targets for either meeting incentive goals or whatever. But we usually have a flurry of things get taken out at the end of the fourth quarter, but I've not seen anything other than normal activity driven by the maturing of the normal ordinary course of business, maturing of the projects we're financing, driving our payoffs.
Okay. Thank you.
And so I see there's no further question at this time. I will now turn the call back to you.
Okay. Folks, well thank you very much. We feel really good about the quarter that we delivered, and as I said earlier, we feel really good about what we see ahead for us and look forward to speaking with you again, if not sooner, when we report on the fourth quarter. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation. As we please disconnect your lines.